This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Broadcasting live on the Civic Media Radio Network, it's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Good to be with you, Matt and Patrick here today. Along the network for the 3 o'clock hour and the 4 o'clock hour, I've got a candidate for the Hennepin County Attorney's Race, Paul Ostro, going to join us. Patrick Cooligan is going to join us. He's got a fantastic story, which we're going to talk about the story a little bit here in the 3 o'clock hour here before we get to his interview with Brett coming up here in the 4 o'clock hour. Good to be with you today. Patrick, I need to make an apology, man, to you. Yesterday was your birthday.
It was.
How old, may I ask?
I turned 32 yesterday.
Sweet Lord, you're a zygote. dear Lord, you were born 20 years after me. I feel old. Actually, 21. That's great. There's enough to age that someone was born the day after I was born. Was legal age to drink before you were born. That's disturbing. Happy birthday. I'm sorry I missed it yesterday. Do you have anything fun planned this week? I mean, were you out of town this weekend or anything, or just working?
I wasn't. I was tied up. I did a lot of work over the weekend and yesterday, but this coming weekend, I might put something together. We'll see what's happening.
You hear that, everyone? Party at Patrick's place. All right. Sounds great. I like a wide variety of hors d'oeuvres.
Who said you were in that?
It wouldn't be the first time I crashed a party. When am I ever invited? That's the real question here. Happy birthday, my friend. You do a fantastic job here, and this show is just – I enjoy doing my work because of you and Brett, and I love being here. So happy birthday to you. I'm glad you're 32, my friend, and hopefully we'll celebrate many more here together, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
The Hoover Dam's not doing well. Did you see the video footage of the explosion?
Yeah, that was kind of scary. They weren't reporting on the news a transformer blew. That's why the fire started.
Was it Optimus Prime? No, I'm just joking. I will say this. Okay, I have seen transformers blow before because of lightning and stuff like that. I've never seen one go up like that because that acted like it was a bomb. I mean, and I'm not saying there's anything nefarious here, although did you notice in the news at the top of the hour, the witness what is the Russian here? I have no idea how my suitcase got down there. Oopsies. No, I'm not saying anything nefarious happened. But that was a little bit more of an explosion than I'm used to. You know, you usually don't see fireballs with, at least to my knowledge. Are you storing the gas there? What? That seemed a little odd. It provides power for Vegas. So I imagine there's a little concern there. I know that they've got in Lake Mead, which is right behind that, I believe, is the water levels are – I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but it's – yeah, I'm a little concerned here for the power supply of the Southwest.
It's funny – well, not funny, but that's kind of what you were talking about yesterday with the Colorado River late in the show that – you know, like they needed to take action on that 5 years ago, much less still doing nothing now.
Well, it's infrastructure problems. Did you see there's a video running around up on social media on Twitter of heavy rain in New York City, and you just see in the subway it pouring down. The water just coming right through the streets like it's raining on top of you only, you know, because it's pooled. It's pretty heavy duty.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I mean, and on the one side, I mean, it does get up the smell of urine in the New York subway system, which I can't believe that's easy to clean.
The rat droppings.
Oh, yeah. Well, rats have actually, you know, formed rafts off the pizza box. And it's more of a subculture at this point. I don't want to judge. But needless to say, it's I'm very concerned. I think one of the things the Democrats have failed at in this election cycle is talking about that infrastructure bill, because that infrastructure bill that got passed by Biden was a huge deal. And frankly, and I'm going to be blunt, you could pass three or four more of those tomorrow and they would all be in need. All of them be in need. So, yeah, I don't know what happened out of the Hoover Dam. It I'll take you at your word that it was just a transformer blowing up, but it, you know, if you know what I mean, it looked like a transformer blowing up there. Oh, give me a Mark Wahlberg sighting down there. Those were disturbing movies. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I want to continue a little bit of a discussion on the issue of Roe v. Wade being overturned. And, Patrick, just give me a heads up when you're ready to play the audio that we've got there. Okay, give me a thumbs up whenever you're ready to do that. Maybe we'll tell you what. Maybe we'll save that for the next segment. Okay, maybe we'll do that just because I'm looking at the time here. I want to make sure we get the whole thing in. We had a big rally up here in St. Paul on this weekend, and there were quite a few speakers. Yesterday we played Minnesota House Rep 5 District, Ilhan Omar, in her very good speech. She, by the way, was arrested today. Yes, I know she was. What had happened is they were out at the Supreme Court. She has been arrested in Washington, D.C. According to reports from various sources, an event was being held outside the U.S. Capitol to protest the United States Supreme Court's overturning of Roe v. Wade. Omar was expected to attend along with other Democratic congressional members. The U.S. Capitol Police confirmed that 34 arrests were made for crowding, obstructing, and incommodating, including 16 members of Congress. Capitol Police said on Twitter that protesters were starting to block First Street Northeast, and that is against the law to block traffic. So officers were there, were there to give out 3 standard warnings before making arrests. What is it, freaking Beetlejuice? 3 warnings. It's unknown at what time Omar was specifically arrested. The congresswoman represents District 5 in Minnesota, and said on social media last week, "I won't back down to defend the reproductive rights and the right to body autonomy." You've got a fight going on. And I want to tell Democrats in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois, wherever you're listening to us right now, I want to talk to you because this is the issue. Now, I want to step back for a quick second before I get more into this and say that as a guy who sits and reads the news intensively a lot, I like reading news. I like being informed. I read from a wide variety of news sources, from the BBC to even occasionally Fox News. But I do. I read across the spectrum. I read local news, national news, international news. I try to be well informed. One of the things I have noticed, the first sign of this was a few years back, 2014, election cycle 2014. We had, of course, a crisis in America that we, of course, since then have never come across anything close to it. That was, ready for it, ready? Ebola! That's right. Remember that? Ebola. I think there was like 3 cases in the United States. We had, you know, at that point, Republicans were using that issue to try to scare voters. And so there were demands for additional hospital staff, you know, for vaccination clinics, for quarantine zones, masks everywhere. That's back when Republicans actually gave a rat's caboose about public health. Good times. Anywho, the thing I noticed about that was the day after the election, I think it was the day of the election, what had been a news story which had controlled the entire news narrative for months disappeared. It was gone. It didn't even exist anymore. It didn't. It was gone. I called up. I used to do TV traffic here in town for the local Fox TV station, which is nothing like the Fox News guys. They're actually pretty good. I worked with the morning crew over there, Tom and Alex and Keith, and they're very nice. And I contacted Alex, who's a fantastic newswoman, and I said to Alex, Kendall, you know, hey, Alex, what happened here? Where did the stories go? I have no idea. It's just, it's not there. I mean, we're covering the election today, but there's no auxiliary, you know, no news feeds. No one's talking about Ebola anymore. And that's when I first came to come to grips with the fact that the media, whether intentionally or not, is being controlled to drive a very conservative narrative. Because the people that benefited from that Ebola story were Republicans. This morning, I'm scouring the news. And the trends, national, local, this was what you saw, was Democrats, even though 60 to 70% of the country want Roe v. Wade to stay legal, Democrats are going to have a hard sell come November. What? Really? What was even more obnoxious is that if you look at the polling numbers for people for the political position of no exceptions ever, including in rape, incest, in the life of the mother, no exemptions for abortion at all, that polls between 5 and 10, most of the time around 6 or 7. That is a fringe mentality in this country, an extreme fringe. But I saw three stories, one local, two national, that basically said, you know, they're staying with us, but hey, you know, you got to admire their grit. Really? The way that it was being painted was these Republicans that were out there supporting an issue that was really fringe was, oh gosh, they've got gumption and spirit. Meanwhile, the Democrats, who have an issue that the vast majority of us agree with, well, it was, oh, they better not even try to campaign on that. They'll never win. And the reality is that what I think you're seeing is the media themselves have been so corrupted to push forward conservative talking points and narratives that they don't even see it anymore. And part of their goal, too, is let's make sure we understand this. It's money. They don't want an election which is wildly out of sync, where one side's going to win. They need to keep these elections close. More on this when I come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on a Tuesday. On WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, the Shaw and Waukesha, Milwaukee area, and Madison, Devil Radio 92.7 in Madison, WTTN 1580 AM in Columbus, and at AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota in Minneapolis, St. Paul. It is the Matt McNeil Show on a Tuesday. So, first of all, understand the media, news media is not necessarily our friend. There definitely seems to be a narrative when it comes to Roe v. Wade, as it's portrayed, that Democrats can't win with the issue, but look at these Republicans putting out these extremist views. It's a gutsy call. Let's see if it wins for them. That's kind of how the news media is reporting this stuff. What the reality is that we have to do more to get rid of the stigma of what has happened. And I'm going to play for you. Now, generally, especially for the folks in Madison, I'm generally not going to do too much with local politicians up here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, because I know it doesn't really have a lot of impact. But I want to play this because this is a state representative in Minnesota from St. Paul. Representative Kalee Herr is her name. She was at that rally on Sunday in St. Paul. And she does something which is such an important element of the fight to make sure women have control of their own bodies, as well as the rest of us with this current Supreme Court. And that is that she shares her own story, which is important. And I'll talk more about this here, but let's play. This is about 6 minutes long. I think it's an important lesson that even though this is a local politician up here, it's this. I think we need to have more discussions and more people talking about this to take away the stigma of this, as well as also to prevent people from going through this life-changing moment by themselves. Here is Representative Kalee Herr.
I reflected deeply on this outrage, and what I've come to understand is that beneath my anger is a lot of sadness and pain. Sadness and pain because of a 25-year-old untold story and the system in place that taught me to feel ashamed of myself and my decision. Seeing all of you here today has given me the courage to be vulnerable. Though I'd hope to never share my story, I know that the moment calls for it. In my early 20s, I learned that I was pregnant. I was a recent college graduate and newly married, making very little money. I was not in a position to start a family. My husband and I had hoped to work for a few years, increase our salaries, pay down our school loans, support our families financially, and own a home before having children. I was terrified. But for as long as I could remember, all I ever wanted to do was marry my now husband and have children with him. That was my dream. Simple and idyllic, but it was my dream nonetheless. A few weeks into my pregnancy, I started spotting. I went in to see my primary care physician, and in that very short visit, she told me I had an ectopic pregnancy, stated she was sorry, and exited the exam room. I was not provided with options or what to do. Because I wasn't provided with any information, I found my way to a facility I thought could help me. They performed an ultrasound and advised me to follow through with the pregnancy. I later came to learn that that facility was not a medical provider, but a crisis pregnancy center. Something inside of me told me to keep searching for options. I found my way to an abortion clinic where medically trained professionals talked me through my situation, what an ectopic pregnancy was, and provided me with options. I sought counsel from numerous faith leaders for guidance. I agonized and wept over the choices in front of me. I eventually came to believe that I needed to end the pregnancy. And I cried, and then I cried some more, and I cried until the moment of the procedure. Despite this, after the DNC, I was relieved. I carried the guilt of my decision until very recently. The shame one carries because the system we must navigate is intentionally set up so that we cannot share our experiences, process with others, or grieve the loss. It took decades for me to completely understand what an ectopic pregnancy was and the risk to my own life. Once I was able to reconcile that there was really nothing I could have done except for to end the pregnancy, I still felt incredibly alone because I was carrying this burden by myself. But today, I no longer carry that shame and loneliness. I cannot sit by and allow a system to exist where my two daughters have less rights to their bodies and options for their reproductive care than I did. That's right. My ancestors did not fight a secret war and escape communism only for me to end up in a country that would eventually take away my right to make decisions for my own body. I will be damned if I sit by and not fight as hard for the future of all women and people with uteruses. The challenges before us are great, and there is much at risk. Today, we are still fighting for equal rights for women. We prevent age-appropriate sex education, and we impose Christian values and how this informs sex and pregnancy. We deny women and BIPOC people equal pay for equal work. We refuse to implement systems where everyone has the right to affordable health care. We reduce safety net programs that help struggling families. We won't invest in high quality and affordable child care. And we ignore the housing crisis and the important role this plays in raising a family. We stack the odds against anyone wanting to start a family. And then when someone says they cannot bring a child into this world, we now will force them to complete their pregnancy. This is not okay, and it must stop. We may not be able to change the Supreme Court decision, but we can do something in Minnesota. We can keep fighting to remove medically unnecessary laws that create barriers to abortion access. That's right. We can ensure that women who travel to Minnesota to obtain an abortion have the resources they need. We can protect patients and providers from out-of-state attacks and overreach into our state. One sure way to do all of this is we must elect a pro-choice DFL majority. That's right. We need to hold the House and flip the Senate. You can help by voting in your primaries, volunteering on a campaign, door knocking, and giving financially to candidates. Specifically, I want you to support districts where we must hold or flip those seats. Candidates in one of these seats, please raise your hand so that people can see who you are. Raise your hand so that you can get volunteers to help you. That's right. I ask all of you to fight like our future depends on it, because it truly does. We must be relentless. On our watch, we let a GOP Congress refuse to confirm Supreme Court justices during Obama's administration. We allowed an extremist president to appoint conservative justices. We watched why those justices lied about the belief that Roe did not need to be codified because it was the law of the land. We will not be fooled that overturning Roe was the end goal. We know that it is just the beginning of the personhood movement by ultra-conservatives. Overturning Roe opened the door to also strike down other landmark cases that provided rights to marginalized groups such as BIPOC and LGBT plus individuals. Not on our watch.
All right, and there you go. That's Representative Kalee Herr speaking out there in a very powerful speech that she had. And once again, I do know for the people that are listening outside of Minneapolis, St. Paul, that that's, you know, we're talking a little bit, it's a little local there. But the reality is what she said is very important. Now, really quick before I get into the break here, Ogema Gnu Ikwe from Native Roots Radio. She is the journalist that got us that. Ogema, thank you very much. And if you're not listening to Native Roots Radio on these networks, it's fantastic show, 6 o'clock hour. We'll take a break. Come on back. Matt McNeil right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. On the Civic Media Radio Network, it's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Once again, thank you very much to Ogema Gnu Ikwe from Native Roots Radio. Fantastic journalist who got me the audio from Representative Kalee Herr's speech. There are a few things that I want to make sure we point out about that speech. One is the crisis center. Now, I want to make sure we understand what exactly happened there when she went to the medical center, the people that are basically just there. These are centers that are disguised as, you know, helping. But the reality is their only goal is to get you to not have an abortion. And they won't give you all the information. And as a matter of fact, one of the things which I think is pretty important is that her pregnancy could have killed her. Her pregnancy could have killed her. And the mentality of the religious crisis pregnancy center was, oh, good luck. It reminds me of in The Birdcage when Nathan Lane, you know, just basically said, let them go down with the ship. And you're like, what? But that seems to be the mentality. We would rather, if you're thinking of an abortion, we would rather have you die and then the baby die too, as opposed to you basically get an abortion. That doesn't seem real Christian to me. When you're out there giving them quote unquote medical advice that basically says, oh, yeah, you could die, but you know what? Because of our individual moral principles, we're going to tell you to do something that is endangering your life. Wow. Okay. Ew. I think the point that I talked about earlier as well with the representative was sharing these stories, it's incredibly painful. It is. It's incredibly painful. But to a point, that has been the benefit that the anti-choice people have had, is that people are not willing to necessarily talk about this, what happened to them. And so because of that, it doesn't – to them, it doesn't seem like, oh, well, we're not really, you know, doing anything. If we heard more stories about it, maybe this wouldn't be such a, you know, a deal. So her sharing her story and the fact that the people grieve and people – are trying to process and they have to do this by themselves. I think we need to stop that and give, you know, make sure that people have the support that they do have. And I think part of the key here is get out to help, because this is, you need to get out there and help wherever you're at in these campaigns, because this is the issue that turns, you know, slightly R-leaning districts into Democratic districts. The Republicans can't help themselves. I'll give you a great example here. And once again, I'm going to talk about a local guy here, but this is kind of more of an overview because he is not the only person that's doing this. He is just basically the latest guy to do it. It's Matt Burke. Yeah, that Matt Burke. He used to play football for the Vikings. Yeah. He is the lieutenant governor candidate for the likely GOP nominee for the election coming up here in November, a guy named Scott Jensen, who himself is a absolute delicious dude. He is just a train wreck. But Burke is even worse. I mean, he is a walking gaffe, plus the fact that he looks like Frankenstein without the bolts. Let's just be honest about it. I mean, he does. You think that's an exaggeration. Fire bad. Vote Grinson. Well, using that charm and wit that we've all come to know from Matt Burke, he apparently was out speaking at a National Right to Life conference in Georgia. This is on the day that the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. He video of the message here. Now, once again, they're trying to play themselves as non-extremists here in Minnesota. They're trying to play us off, themselves off as non-extremists. Here are some of the things that Burke mentioned. First of all, he compared a rape survivor's choice to end their pregnancy to the actions of the rapist, saying he opposes abortion for rape victims because two wrongs don't make a right. Says a guy who can't be raped. Well, it could be raped, but can't then have a baby involved with it if that is the case. You, Matt Burke, don't think two wrongs. You label this as two wrongs don't make a right. The reality is you're re-victimizing the rape victims by basically then telling them what they have to do because of Jesus wants you to suffer longer. That's just God's way. Jeez, really? By the way, before anyone says, Matt, are you bringing Christianity into this? Oh, of course I am. I like to sometimes. Disclaimer, you do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do. I'm a Christian. Genesis 2:9. Life begins at breath. Breath. At breath. And in Numbers, boy, I don't know if you've read Numbers 5, but God sort of gives Moses directions there on how to give an abortion. Yeah, it's a part of the old Bible you like to skip on past a little bit. That and the whole Gospel of Matthew, you know, feeding the hungry, taking care of the sick, all that stuff. All the Republicans hate that chapter. But just if you want to go read Numbers, it's an interesting book. But hey, heaven forbid the Bible get in the way of Christians, huh? Burke said the culture promotes abortions by telling women they should have careers. What? Matt Burke says that because women are having careers, that by telling women that you should have a career, that encourages a culture that promotes abortion. Now, coming up here in the 4 o'clock hour locally, I'm going to be talking with Patrick Cooligan, who is a writer for Minnesota Reformer. He's put out the story today. He actually makes this point, at least here in the state of Minnesota. It's unclear from the video clip what the relationship between the culture promoting abortion and promoting women in the workforce. What is clear, if women stopped working, Minnesota's economy would collapse. Just before the pandemic, women made up 51.5% of the Minnesota labor force. So is Matt Burke saying that no woman should be in the workforce? Yeah, the chicky poos need to stay in the kitchen and make me some breakfast. Give me a beer. That's what the chicky poos need to do. Is that what you're saying, Matt? Because that seems really stupid and misogynistic and just generally jackassery. How about I say it like that? Yeah. Good luck in November, Matt. Also, he said that pro-choice advocates like to use the rape card. Okay. Burke. The people that like to use the rape card are rapists. You basically trying to say people that say, look at a 10-year-old victim of rape and say, no, you probably shouldn't have to carry that baby to term just for many reasons, including the health of your own body, the fact that you've been victimized. There are many reasons why you shouldn't. To sit there and say, well, you're no better than the rapist. Screw you, Og. Seriously. And then he inexplicably compared abortion to slavery. Wow. Wow. You see, this is an old tactic of Republicans. Hitler, the rapist, slavery, Idi Amin, vampires. It's like vampires. They'll use anything they can. 9/11. They'll just try to if they have to scare you into believing them, which is pretty much the standard way for Republicans today. You know, their point doesn't make any sense. So this is where they're at. Needless to say, Governor Tim Walz is having a field day in Minnesota with this video because it kind of lays out for especially for suburban voters. You can see where he's going here, and he would be the lieutenant governor of the state. Oh, watch out, townsfolk. Here comes Matt Burke. Get your pitchforks and torches ready to go. He does. He looks way too much like Frankenstein. Anyway. Yeah. Don't be afraid of this issue. The issue, the population believes it. And of course, and then one other thing too that Representative Herr brought up is that this is just the beginning for these clowns. I want you to think about this. And I understand you probably don't think this would happen to you, but this whole personhood movement, this Christian right nationalism that they're trying to push on all of us, they want to kick in your door of your private residence, storm up to your bedroom, and if they have determined that you are having a certain type of sex that's not pre-approved with a certain individual that's not pre-approved, you're going to jail. That's the sodomy laws. They were all struck down under the same clauses that basically struck down all these other heinous laws that were on the books. So we're looking at, you know, them getting rid of contraception and getting rid of gay marriage and getting rid of interracial marriage. And they want to start kicking in doors of your private residence, storming up to your bedroom, watching you, I guess, have sex, and then determining what kind of sex you're having. Does it fall within the pre-approved Republican Christian right catalog of appropriate sex, and is the person you're having it with, or people, party on, folks, is that acceptable? No, off to jail you go. That is where this is going. And once again, as every Republican sits there and says, we're not extremists. The reality is there's video of them. I mean, this was not long ago. This wasn't like 4 years ago. This was a few weeks ago. Matt Burke was saying this stuff. So this is their extremist agenda is there. If they say, oh, we're not going to do that, they're lying. This should light fire under everyone because this is everyone's rights. And like I said, and I said this the first day I was on the air on the network, you have got to get out there. You have got to get out there, and you have got to vote for 12 freaking years. If every Democrat does, we can fix this problem, but it's probably going to take 12 years to do it. So that's it. Plug your nose, vote for a candidate you agree with most things on, but not completely. Just do it, because if not, then it might be you having your door kicked open and saying, I'm sorry, your partner is not approved for you to be having sexual relations and you shouldn't be doing it that way. You're under arrest. Yep, that's where they're headed. 952-946-6205. I wanted to get into something else here that is a little away from the political circuit. And that is what we do with comedians, actors, and stuff like that, who have been, basically accused or credibly proven to be guilty of inappropriate behavior. I was reading the story of Armie Hammer. He was an actor out there. He did a few different things. And he is currently, I guess, because he got outed for, sexual inappropriate behavior, he is now, I guess, selling timeshares in the Cayman Islands or something like that. And, he's out of business, out of show business. And that's what he's doing. Dave Chappelle is someone who has come under some fire. He has made up a lot of comments in the last year or so about trans people, the LGBTQ plus community, during stand-up comedy special that was released on Netflix. He is just announced he is coming to First Avenue here in Minneapolis. He's going to do a show. Is it tomorrow night? Is it? I think it's tomorrow night.
I believe he's added two more, so now it's three.
It's three, but two of them at the Varsity Theater. One's at First Avenue. How popular is David Chappelle? Tickets for the 48-year-old's spontaneous comedy show at First Ave sold out in 5 minutes on Tuesday morning. But not everyone is excited about his presence in Minneapolis. Many took to Twitter to express dislike for Chappelle, who came under fire last year for comments he made about trans people in the LGBTQ plus community during the comedy special. Read those comments. You're platforming someone who is deliberately choosing to target trans people at a specific historical moment in which those actual people's lives are in actual danger even more than usual. The context matters, or at least it should, an activist wrote in response to First Ave's announcement. Another person responded to First Avenue by saying transphobia is not a comedy, it's violence, and First Avenue is either a safe space for trans people or it's not. Chappelle argues that most people who are angry with him are the ones who only hear the sound bites and are opposed to the whole sets. He says the target of his jokes are not gay or trans people, but white people who insinuates the jokes are retaliatory for the way that queer white people still oppress black people. I never had a problem with transgender people. If you look at what I'm trying to say, my problem has always been with white people. Needless to say, I'm going to take a break. I want to come on back. I want to talk a little about this because what do you do if, once again, yeah, the guy said some bad things, but he sells out and people are still booking him? We'll talk about that. It's the Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's the Matt McNeil Show on Devil Radio 92.7 FM in Madison, WTTN 1580 AM in Columbus, WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM the Shaw in Waukesha, Milwaukee area, and AM 950 the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Good to be with you. So once again, Dave Chappelle announces he's going to do a show at First Avenue, and now he's also announced two more shows up here in Minneapolis at the Varsity Theater. And you know, in case you haven't heard, he has basically made a lot of jokes and a lot of comments at the expense of transgender people in the LGBTQ plus community, and people are upset about it. He says that these jokes are basically making fun of the white people that make fun of those minority groups. However, the anger may come from other things he said, especially like aligning himself with author J.K. Rowling, who, once again, if there's any person that is absolutely destroyed any good feeling in success that they've had, is J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter books, who has basically been one of the anti-trans leaders, I guess you could call her, on the planet. He claims that gender is a fact. He made several jokes about the expense of trans people during the show. He noted at the end of the special he would stop doing jokes that relate to the LGBTQ community, asking the community to stop punching down on my people in return. The backlash led to an attempted attack on Chappelle during a show in Hollywood Bowl in Los Angeles, with the suspect saying he did it because Chappelle's Netflix special was triggering. The attacker told NBC News he identifies as bisexual. Once again, he's doing three shows. Now, I had this discussion, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I had this discussion when the other comedian who why am I driving? Do you know off the top of your head? I'm drawing a blank all of a sudden. The other comedian that got in trouble for sexual inappropriate behavior.
Louis C.K.
Thank you very much, Louis C.K. Thank you, Louis C.K. Louis C.K. has come around and he's done shows nationwide, and he goes to comedy clubs. And he did a lot of horrible things, and his shows sell out in 10 minutes. And I brought up the point. I said, okay, so you have to understand too that what are – I mean, I understand people are upset. I'm not going to go to Chappelle. I'm not. Even if I had tickets offered to me, I would not go to Dave Chappelle because I disagree with that. Have I laughed at Dave Chappelle? Yes, he is. At times, he has been very funny. But there is times when people cross lines. And there are too many other funny comedians out there that are not out there bashing on other groups. In the same sense as I would never tolerate someone bashing on the black community. I would never tolerate someone bashing on the Latino community or the Asian community or the Native American community. I wouldn't tolerate it. And that's understanding that sometimes black people will talk about the black community. That's their community. They have the right to talk about it. And that's the case. I don't think it's right for some people, a person that's not part of a community, to go on out there and start making hurtful comments. I just don't. That's just me, though. That being said, Are you upset with the people that sold the place out in 10 minutes? That's a lot of tickets and real fast at First Avenue. Or are you upset with the venue for hosting him? And that's, I think that that's a legit question. You know, do you get mad at the venue? You know, what's the venue? The venue is there to bring in talent and sell out the place, and they do with these guys. So is your frustration with the venue, or is your frustration with the amount of people that no matter what he says, they're going to buy tickets and buy a lot of them and real fast? Or is it a little bit of both? And the other thing is this. If you're going to say to – and I think when I brought up Armie Hammer, he is an actor, and obviously he's not doing movies anymore. He's out there – like I said, he was working as a concierge slash sales guy for timeshares or real estate somewhere out in the Cayman Islands or something. When that story broke – when he was out there, all of a sudden people started hounding his business. Well, that's the question I have is like, okay, if you're going to say to someone – you can't perform on stage anymore. You have crossed the line. You can't do that. Well, what can they do? Because let's be honest, just because someone is not there doesn't mean the person hasn't said or done the inappropriate behavior. So putting him working the line at a Jersey Mike's to make sub sandwiches, is that any less safe? So is the point here you're trying to destroy his career, or is the point saying it really is? And I understand, once again, you're talking about people who are making comments versus the people like Louis C.K. and Armie Hammer who have actually done inappropriate sexual behavior. Is the point that you're going to say you can't even do that, which is an interesting point. I don't quite know what you can do there. Because if it's not decent for them to come and do a show at a theater, is it decent for them to work selling real estate in the Cayman Islands? If you are okay with them doing that, then it's just your point that he doesn't deserve to have Hollywood anymore. He doesn't deserve it. Because in my mind, I'll bring up Armie Hammer here. If he's guilty of the sexual inappropriate behavior, well, isn't there just as much of a risk that he could have the sexually inappropriate behavior out where he's working this job right now? Is it just because it's not on your vision horizon that, oh, that's okay. It's okay for him to potentially do the same things over there because he's just some unknown real estate agent in the Cayman Islands versus a guy in Hollywood. I don't know if that – the point seems to be that he's done things that he has forfeited the right to be part of society. So if that doesn't bother you, then was the point just getting rid of his Hollywood career or not? In the case of Chappelle, which is different, if you're upset with him working on a stage and getting that kind of venue and that attraction, would you be upset if he was – if he bought a theater – in a town and just did shows, and that's, you know, kind of he bought a house in Los Angeles, he's out there, or a theater in Los Angeles, and every night he goes out and does a show and it sells out every night. Would that be appropriate? Would you be okay with that? I think this is a tough question to ask. I can honestly say this. When it comes down to this stuff, all I'm responsible for is my own actions and my own behavior. That is it. You are all responsible. I am not here to tell you what to freaking do. You go do what you want to do, okay? That has always been my mantra. I'm not going to go see the guy because, you know, it's kind of the same way. It's like I feel the same way about, you know, whenever I see an old Mel Gibson film, and I'm like, oh, God, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't enjoy that one nearly as much as I used to. Most of the time, I don't even watch it. So what is it that we want to do here? Is it that they can't perform? That they can't perform in venues like this? Are you mad at the venue? Are you mad at the ticket buyers? And what do you do if all of a sudden we run someone out of their industry? Is them doing another job just as bad or not? There's a tougher questions, folks, for another day. In Madison, Milwaukee, and Waukesha, you got Devils Radio coming up. Hour number two in Minneapolis, St. Paul up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Hour number two of the show here. Good to be with you, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Matt and Patrick here. Patrick, did you watch any of the Home Run Derby last night with the baseball All-Star game? Did you catch any of that?
I watched actually most of it. I missed the first couple of rounds. I missed the first. I can't think of the right word because rounds isn't it. I missed the first.
Matchups.
Yeah,
the first matchups. round matchups. You know, I, for me, it is one of those, if there's a twin in there, like when Morneau won it a few years back, you know, it's, you know, I'll watch it. It's fun to watch some of the runs go on out there. It just is, it's, you know, it has very little to do with baseball. It's like when those guys, you ever seen the golfers where the golfers have the drivers and they do the long drive competitions where all they're trying to do is just hit a ball as far as they can? You ever seen those guys? They're built built like, you know, weightlifters, and they come out with this huge golf club and they whip that thing around fast and it hits that ball way distant. Is that golf? No, it's just, it's kind of a show. It's a show. That's what it is.
You know, the thing I was thinking about last night when I was watching it, and I've never looked at, buying a ticket for a Home Run Derby, but I wondered, is buying a ticket in the outfield bleachers actually going to be more expensive than buying a ticket behind the plate?
Let me explain. You can't get a ticket, man. And with all due respect to you, the entire lower ring, that's all vendors, sponsors, the network guys, Major League Baseball people. The tickets that are released to the public are like two or three sections, and that's it. Everything else is all, it's giveaways out there. And plus the fact that I have a friend that was out there. He was with the business, and he got a ticket one of the years. He says it was the biggest bunch of drunks he'd ever seen in his life. He said there's just, you know, people are just drunks flailing over each other trying to get that ball. So I think you're better. Is Buxton starting? Buxton's starting, right?
Yes, he'll be batting sixth in the lineup.
Buxton starting, and then Narise is going to be on the bench. Coming out, he'll get him into the game. He will for sure. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's time for our, I call it Democrat of the Day, but this is a non-political race. Now, most of the political races I am going to be talking about, obviously, are the national races, the statewide races, Minnesota Senate, Minnesota House. But the Hennepin County Attorney's race is huge because this is going to dictate a lot of the direction of change and reform in that office and how things are going to go move forward from here on out. So I have opened it up on the Hennepin County Attorney's race to talk to the candidates there. And joining us right now is indeed one of the candidates for this race. Paul Ostro is kind enough to join us to talk about his campaign to become the next Hennepin County Attorney. Paul, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
I really appreciate the opportunity to be on. Thank you so much.
My absolute pleasure. I'll start whenever I do talk to a politician. I'll give you the floor here. Why don't you introduce yourself? Who exactly is Paul Ostro?
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Well, I am a prosecutor. I've been a prosecutor for a total of 25 years, both before and after I served on the city council. I was the council president for R.T. Rybak's first term. I also was the budget chair representing Northeast Minneapolis, home of the best arts district in America, by the way. But I left the city council in 2010. Since then, I have been an Anoka County prosecutor with the most of my work involving what's known as the Anoka Hennepin Violent Crime Task Force. So I'm really excited to be a part of this discussion and really excited about what I think a lot of really important work we could do starting in January.
What was the deciding factor? Why did you say one day, you know what, I'm going to run for the Hennepin County Attorney?
Well, you know, I appreciate that question because, frankly, one of the things I'm running against in this campaign is that, in my view, we've got way too much party politics in this race. We've got political factions. We've got political rivalries. And I think, unlike perhaps many candidates, either in this race or generally, I didn't take a poll of folks and find out what people of influence would support me. I really truly believe that that the approach I have, which is a nonpartisan problem-solving approach to this office, is what's so desperately needed. And at the end of the day, I'm excited about doing the work because I think we can make tremendous progress on public safety, but I think we can also make tremendous progress on regaining the trust of so many in the criminal justice system as well.
Your website, and it's paulostroforhennepin.com, I believe. Your website, you break down, you have a 10-point plan. Why don't you take some time here and go through some of your plan here and what you would like to achieve if you do become the Hennepin County Attorney?
Great. Well, thank you for that. First of all, let me say that the folks that are causing the biggest problems with public safety is a relatively small number of those that the criminal justice system comes into contact with. But unfortunately, that relatively small number of people have really upset the feeling of personal security that people have. And the number one issue, really, in my view on that, is what I call catch and release. And we're not here talking about low-level offenders. We're talking about repeat offenders, violent offenders who are not being held quickly accountable for probation violations and repeat offenses and then right back out on the streets. It's also true of some of our violent juveniles, frankly, who we now do not have the proper place to place those juveniles who are a threat to both themselves and to others. With the closing of some of the facilities several years ago, which was a major mistake, so too many of the juveniles involved in the most violent offenses are being released right back out of the street. I've also been someone who's really pushed for tackling the fentanyl epidemic, which is killing twice as many people as guns. Unfortunately, from the work I do, I know there are people that are profiting off of selling this poison and killing our kids. We've got to get a handle on that.
And by the way,
if
I can jump in on that, I'm very glad you're the fentanyl. I was looking at the numbers. I mean, we have a lot of media coverage here about, you know, the murder rates, things going on in Minneapolis and stuff. But the reality is what was it, 1,200 people in the state of Minnesota, over 1,200 people died of overdoses. The vast majority were fentanyl related. And I think that we have to understand that this is a massive epidemic that needs to be immediately addressed. And you're right. I mean, these pills are flowing into Minnesota. There has to be a more focus, I think, on that, because we just can't be losing 1,000 people in Minnesota every year to drug overdoses.
No question about it. And you know, there have been a few points in the last several years where, as someone who is associated with the DFL pretty much my entire adult life, I've been somewhat stunned of what's happened at the legislature. And frankly, one of the things that stunned me at the legislature is when the DFL House refused to take up a very common sense bill, which would have simply made the penalties for trafficking in fentanyl the same as they are for heroin. As you probably well know, fentanyl is 50 times more dangerous than heroin. So, you know, one might say that as a lifelong Democrat, I hate to ever agree with the Republicans, but that's not even disagreeing with Republicans, because the Senate passed that bill 62-5 last year. So, that's only a part of the puzzle. There's also a need to work with the U.S. Attorney's Office. There's a need for a national effort. I think we should look really hard at making fentanyl a Schedule I controlled substance. But this really is an epidemic that's incredibly killing people, even more than gun violence right now.
Another part of your 10-point plan, and Paul Ostro is joining us right now talking about his campaign to be Hennepin County Attorney. One of your other 10 points here I want to talk a little bit about is getting stolen and illegal firearms off the streets. Couldn't agree with you more. That's the case. The problem that you run into there is that as much as, and I'll call on a political side, as much as conservatives and pro-gun people are lament, you know, crime in Minnesota and Minneapolis, I should say. The reality is when you start suggesting we're going to start rounding up these firearms and getting them off the streets, they're also the first people to say, oh, no, you can't do that. And so talk a little bit about your plan there to address the stolen illegal firearms that are on the streets.
Well, there's several pieces to it. I think for one, that we should have more severe penalties for unlawful possession of an assault weapon, as one example. A pretty low-level offense now for someone to have an assault weapon without a permit, for example, in a public place. It's a fairly low-level offense to transfer that kind of a weapon to somebody. I would argue that nobody needs these weapons, but if we're not able to prohibit them, we really ought to ramp up the penalties for those. There are all sorts of things we can do working with our federal partners. And one of the things I've heard from law enforcement and some ride-alongs I've been doing, there are parts of Minneapolis, even downtown Minneapolis, that you can literally look inside of a car in a parking lot, and you can see a weapon just sitting there. That's how flagrant it's become. And these assault weapons, the use of those in Minneapolis has gone up about 900% in the last year. So much of the focus, of course, has been on these horrific mass shootings, but the reality is these weapons are now badly in common currency among, unfortunately, some of the most violent offenders. Some of what I bring to this as a nonpartisan candidate, I do that as a matter of principle because of the nature of the office is I can, frankly, go to the legislature, and the Hennepin County Attorney, frankly, is probably the leading voice as far as being a prosecutor in the state of Minnesota, and I can go to that body not wearing a partisan hat, and I think advocate across the aisle. I realize how incredibly challenging that is these days, but I do think that would provide some advantages to be in lobbying the legislature for what we really need to do.
It's an interesting position. Hennepin County Attorney's got a real interesting spot to be in because on one side, it's undeniable. We've got carjackings out there, street racing going on. You've got a lot of people out there that are, some of these are low level offenses, some of them larger offenses. There is a crime element that needs to be addressed. But at the same time, we clearly are in a very new age where we have seen very up close police misconduct in the streets of Minneapolis. Killing George Floyd, we have the no knock warrant situation that was used in a person that was in their right to be in their own house was gunned down. You have other cases as well. And talk a little bit about that because I think one of the most important things I think the Hennepin County Attorney is going to have to deal with is at least in the city of Minneapolis and probably some of the first ring suburbs a feeling that. The police need to a point, be reined in. We're waiting for this Department of Justice investigation to come on down with their recommendations. But talk a little bit about that because we need to really it's a two-way street to rebuild the trust in the police. There has to be a standard where if police behavior gets out of line, they are held accountable.
So I'm so glad for that question. Let me first of all say how sad it was to me that we spent an entire year arguing about the charter amendment last year, splitting the DFLers across the city. The irony being that a mayor who once opposed the Department of Public Safety is the end of Minneapolis as we know it, now embracing the idea. It really last year was a wasted year where we could have put our effort into really starting to address these issues, and instead we had political theater, which I think both sides certainly of that debate are responsible for that. And what I pride myself on is being a problem solver, and I'm proud to have the support of a woman you may know by the name of Abigail Sarah. Abigail and I have worked together on a very, very critical issue, which is largely unique to Minneapolis, where sustained police violations result in what is known as coaching. This is a significant part of the Department of Human Rights report that the designation of sustained violations as coaching, those violations do not become public. Derek Chauvin had about 20 violations. We believe he might have been coached for the violent assault on a 14-year-old child. So, quite honestly, when others are holding press conferences and protests, which not that that's unimportant, it isn't. What I've been trying to do even before I ran for this office is look at what are the issues, what are the problems. Those are the kinds of things that we have to do. We have to have a Brady database in Minneapolis that's right now, frankly, being blocked by the city attorney's office in Minneapolis to have the right kind of Brady database. These aren't things that make headlines, but frankly, they should. They are critical to to that. And then the one other piece I want to say is I truly believe that most of the rank-and-file police officers want transparency. Much of the failure of Minneapolis has to rest on the leadership in the police department, and quite honestly, even the elected leadership. And instead, what we've done is we've too often vilified the rank-and-file police officers. Instead of focusing on those who have the responsibility in management and leadership positions to make sure that the accountability systems are what they need to be.
You and I have just spent, I mean, the last thing I'm going to ask you here is this. You and I have just spent a lot of time, obviously, focused on Minneapolis. It is the Hennepin County attorney here. Talk a little bit about, for the people that might be listening to us outside of the metro area, in the secondary, tertiary suburbs, and maybe even the rural parts of Hennepin County, what do you hope to bring to them?
Well, I appreciate that question because, actually, although my political life was as a council member in Minneapolis, my professional life as a prosecutor has been representing suburban communities, either city attorneys or as a county attorney. And so what I really aim to do is to make sure that we have more unity between the suburbs and the city. I think anyone that lives anywhere in Hennepin County, Mayor Rybeck and I used to talk about Minneapolis being the second hometown. There is a vested interest that everybody has that lives in Hennepin County in the success of Minneapolis. But beyond that, the importance of running as a nonpartisan candidate and someone that's really going to try to unify law enforcement and community, unify different parts of the county that have different political perspectives. I really think that's so desperately the leadership we need. We don't need any more fights between various factions and parties. We got to roll up our sleeves. And I do think that at least 70 to 80% of the spectrum, political spectrum, wants to hold violent criminals accountable, but they also need that we need to make the criminal justice system work better. There's all sorts of room for agreement and progress. See, if we just put our warring factions aside and roll up our sleeves and get to work.
I want to, and once again, an informed public makes, you know, the decisions that the public wants to make. And that's the key here. I've already had one of the other candidates on. I'm going to encourage all the rest of the candidates to come on the air to talk about the Hennepin County Attorney's race. If you would like more on Paul Ostro, by all means, I mean, there's a lot of, his webpage has got a lot of information here. It's fairly cleanly laid out here. If you'd like more information, Paul, once again, what is the website for people to go visit you at?
The website is ostroforhennepin.com, and I know we're out of time, but please take a look also at the Transparency Solution, which is, we think, a really important initiative that will create a video center where we have live stream body cameras. We really do believe this is a campaign of substance, and hope that folks will check that website out.
You see, this is the thing, Paul, and I would love, I mean, I could, you and I, all the candidates, I think we could talk for an hour. I mean, it's really a, it's a deep, you know, a lot of issue race here. And so I hope you don't feel like you kind of got cut off here, because we only have a little bit, so much time we can talk. But I do want people, if you'd like more information on Paul Ostro, go to his website, look for this. I'll link to everything on the social media pages, and we'll spotlight the interview as well a little bit later on. Paul, thank you very much. I appreciate the time, and all my best in the race.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate the opportunity, and all the best, everybody.
Thank you. And our candidate of the day, because once again, this is a nonpartisan race, is Paul Ostro, Hennepin County Attorney. One thing I will make sure I mention here before we go to break, the way it works in the Hennepin County Attorney's race is the two top vote getters in the primary, even though there's not a political primary, the two top vote getters will face off in the general election coming up in November. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. That race is actually, I got to be honest with you. I mean, I'm fascinated by how in the hell the Republicans ended up with that lineup of trash statewide candidates for all the offices. They're all just damaged. That's interesting. But the Hennepin County Attorney's race, there is going to be an interesting, I mean, that office is going to have to change. It is definitely going to have to change. And I highly encourage everyone in Hennepin County, and I mean, in any county attorney's race, for goodness sakes, you should know who your county attorney candidates are. But you should take the time to figure out who is standing for what they're standing for. You know, there is this interesting dance the Hennepin County attorney's candidates have to do where there's undeniably a crime issue. Undeniably. As there is in any major city. It's not far worse. It's not far better. It's just that's what happens. Major cities, you have a lot more condensed people and you have more crime that's out there. But you also have a police department that – and I didn't bring up the Stallings case. I didn't have time. I didn't want to – I mean, he was on with me for a while there. We should remind her about the Stallings case. That was the guy that the SWAT team didn't identify themselves, opened fire. He'd return fire thinking it was racists that were out there to attack him. And then they beat him senseless in the street. And it should be noted that they tried to prosecute him. And he was found to be not guilty because the body cam footage clearly showed that he hadn't done anything wrong. That it was the police that had done it, but it wasn't just the police that were behind that prosecution. It was the Hennepin County Attorney's Office as well, who, even though they knew he was innocent, they were still trying to get him to plea to an eight-year deal for doing nothing wrong. There's got to be some major change here. You cannot any longer in the city of Minneapolis. And like I said, when this federal investigation comes down the line, holy God, I can't even comprehend what they're going to come back with. And they're going to have some teeth to make some real major changes in that police department. People do want to see crime addressed, but the people of Minneapolis want to make sure that the Hennepin County attorney is not just a rubber stamp for the Minneapolis Police Department, and that the Hennepin County attorney is going to go on out there and take police misconduct, police misaction, the occasional police murder, and prosecute it and hold them just as accountable as we should want to hold the people who are committing the crimes. That's an interesting balance. And whoever becomes the Hennepin County attorney, that is going to be a very interesting path to tread. I'm going to open it up. I mean, all the Hennepin County attorneys. We've had Mary Moriarty on. We have Paul Ostro on now. All the Hennepin County attorneys, candidates, I'm more than happy to try to get you on the air, and we can talk about your race. Once again, the primary coming up here, the top two vote-getters go into the general election. It is a nonpartisan race, but the reality is, the vast majority of these guys generally come from the left-leaning side of the political aisle, with one or two exceptions. But, it's up to you to educate yourself. I'm not here to tell you who to vote for. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Well, I mean, vote for the Democrats. Of course. We've seen what the Republicans do. They're horrible, horrible. Vote DFL. But when it comes to DFL primaries, you figure out who the best candidate is and make your case. At the end of the day, your candidate does win. Great. They don't. Suck it up and vote DFL. That's the only way you're going to fix all these problems. Let's take a break. Come on back. Patrick Cooligan from Minnesota Reformer. Phenomenal story about Burke. We'll get to that here in just a moment. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Have you ever seen... Brett's joining us in studio. Patrick, Brett, Matt here. Have you ever seen a worse lineup of statewide race candidates than the Republicans have put forward this year?
For a party that's supposed to have a red wave, they're still trying their best to seize defeat from the jaws of victory. I mean, these candidates are not good at all. You are absolutely...
Crockett, the anti-Semitic video... The Secretary of State, who doesn't seem to understand how you vote in Minnesota, wants to be the head of the elections. And she had an anti-Semitic video. And she, after today's story, which we're about to talk about with Cooligan, she might not be the worst one on that ticket. That is amazing. You got Schultz, the AG candidate, who's on the record. He's part of that far-right organization that basically says, you know, force women to have babies. I don't care if they're going to die, sort of thing. There is – didn't that organization that he was part of say that there has never been a legitimate reason, a health reason, for a woman to get an abortion? I think that was the case.
That's pretty brutal if that's the case.
Oh,
yeah.
I think that was what he said. There's the guy that makes up all the stories because it's nothing. We don't have that song. We don't have the CSI Miami. Yeah, because he likes to exaggerate a little bit and take things and make them extreme. You have him, but man, pound for pound, there's a reason why Michael Broadcorp, who's a Republican, has said, I can't believe they put those. That's going to be our ticket. Jensen's going to be our ticket.
Well, at least for AG, there's a reasonable candidate running in Doug Wardlow.
Ah, that's right.
Which might actually be the most reasonable of everyone running.
And if you're following, by the way, follow Broadcorp's Twitter feed. If you're following, there's an all-out war in the Republican Party against Doug Wardlow right now.
Oh.
Oh, and who's, you know, Mr. Krispy Kreme down in, Jeremy Munson. He's the guy that was running for one. And then he's in the primary on the day that the special election happens. Oh, they don't like him that much either down there anymore. Oh, God, I have never seen a cavalcade of disgust as bad as this. This truly is manna from heaven. So let's we do have to get to Cooligan here. The reason why we're talking about this is there's video that's arisen of Matt Burke, the lieutenant governor candidate, Frankenstein, as I've liked to refer to him. Og, as I've also liked to refer to him, he apparently was having a little speech out there, and he said some things that I don't think are going to resonate with suburban voters.
Yeah, and it's important to point out with this speech, and we bring this up in the interview with Patrick Coulican, this isn't something where we're pulling audio from like 8 or 10 years ago at some obscure forum that wasn't supposed to be videotaped. This took place about a month ago on the day Roe v. Wade was overturned. He was giving this speech at this anti-abortion conference.
I don't want to give anything away, but we have to give a round of applause to Mr. Cooligan here, because in the story here, he talks about, because one of the things Burke says is that, you know, women having careers is kind of a contributor to abortion. And he points out, well, if you're sending all the women from the workforce home, that's 51.5% of Minnesota's workforce. So, well, that will completely cavitate the economy. Good luck with that. Wow. Not a stance I would make if you're trying to look as the non-extremist party.
Yeah, when you have Scott Jensen trying to say, oh, I'm actually a moderate. You know, I support all these exceptions for allowing people to have abortion. And then you get Matt Burke making those comments a month ago.
I'd play the Death Star, the Empire Strikes Back music against the guy. But the reality is that, hey, at least the Empire had some organization. That campaign's a freaking mess. All right, so it is Patrick Coulian.
Yeah, we'll be talking with him about the comments with Matt Burke, a little bit on Tyler Kushner and his campaign finance troubles, as well as hemp legalization in Minnesota and how Governor Walz visited a facility in Waconia earlier this week, after we get through the Republican controversy, of course, that we'll be spending a big portion of the interview on.
If Matt Burke and Jensen were in charge of the Death Star, how long before Burke starts looking into the laser killer, the moon, the planet-destroying laser? Is that working in there? Let me take a look down in there. Don't do that! Stop that! That's a bad thing! And put a railing there! Some geeks just went crazy for that line, all right? It's Brett Johnson with Patrick Coulican right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And as usual on Tuesdays, we're joined by Patrick Coulican, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you check them out for the latest in Minnesota news and politics over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Again, MinnesotaReformer.com. Patrick, welcome back to the show. Good to have you on.
Always good to be here.
Yeah, I want to start things off talking about a couple of articles that you have been reporting on. And let's start off in the 2nd Congressional District, where the incumbent is DFLer Angie Craig, who is running for re-election against Tyler Kushner, the likely Republican nominee who nearly beat her back in 2020. Now, the latest in this race is that Kushner, who again is challenging Craig, has not filed a required financial disclosure report with the House clerk, despite a deadline of 2 months ago back in May. So
Tell us a little bit about what exactly this is that Kistner missed, and what is his campaign saying as in terms of why this was missed? Because that's 2 months late now. They're missing this financial disclosure deadline.
Right. The House clerk collects these disclosure forms and makes them public. And the reason they're so important is we want to know a person's financial entanglements if and when they get elected to Congress. So we can be sure that they're acting in the people's interests and not their own personal interests. He is late on it. His campaign told me that the paperwork has been completed but not turned in, and they expected it to be filed quickly. This was the end of last week. My comment was that there's some dog running around with a full belly with Tyler Kistner's financial disclosure form, because I didn't really, the excuse seemed kind of lame to me. And the reason this is an issue for Kistner is because we already have some questions about his own personal financial situation. In November, the Star Tribune reported that he had reimbursed himself almost $7,000 for mileage. It was between April 20th and early July of last year. And if you did the math on that, it's 160 miles per day every day. And, I mean, it's a decent-sized district, but it's not that large. And it just kind of beggared belief that he would be driving that much every single day. I mean, remember, if there's a day you don't drive, then you have to drive 320 the next day. And in his previous financial disclosure form, he had reported, I think, something like $28,000 in income from his consulting company. I would like to know more about this consulting company. But $28,000, not very much. And then you throw in this huge mileage tab, and you start to wonder, well, what exactly, you know, how is he getting by here? And who's paying him to run for office? So it is an issue, and I think we're all eager to see what it's going to be on his financial disclosure. But as we said, he's late.
And it would be one thing if this were the first time he's had an issue with campaign finance disclosures. But as you brought up, he still had an issue with all of this money that he was personally reimbursing himself for with travel. Did we get any information in terms of how those costs were justified? Because, again, he would have been having to travel about 160 miles per day to justify that reimbursement, which seems a little unrealistic to me.
Yeah, I think he told the Star Tribune that he was busy campaigning. I think his quote was, or actually they sent out a spokesman, told the Star Tribune at the time that Tyler has put thousands of miles on his personal vehicle, traveling to every corner of the second district, meeting with voters about their concerns and the importance of having a true servant leader representing them in Congress. So, they said they thoroughly log and review all expenses, and are acting in accordance with FEC guidance. That's one where the FEC is going to have a really hard time proving there's something amiss here. And I don't think this is a big enough fish for the IRS. I think it's hard to enforce the rules on this.
Now, Angie Craig's campaign has filed a complaint with the Department of Justice, which does enforce the Ethics in Government Act, and they are citing Kistner's failure to file that required disclosure. What exactly does this mean or do from the Craig campaign in terms of what they're doing, filing this complaint with the Department of Justice? Is there any teeth to this, or what happens next in that case?
I think DOJ has bigger fish to fry, certainly the Craig campaign got a little story out of it in a few outlets. I think it's important to note that, this is one of the top battlegrounds in the entire country. I think as Angie Craig goes, so go the Democratic majority in the House, which certainly looks imperiled. But to Craig's credit, I mean, she's really working hard, and I think she's trying to be the right candidate for that district, and she's shown that a few times in the past year.
Speaking with Patrick Coolican, he is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you go to minnesotareformer.com. I want to talk about Matt Burke now, who, of course, is the running mate of Scott Jensen, who is running for the governor of Minnesota, because some recent video surfaced of Burke speaking at a national anti-abortion group in Georgia back in June, on the same day where the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade. And he had a couple of controversial quotes that could come back and bite the Jensen-Burke campaign. We'll read some of these right now. One says, quote, "Our culture loudly but also stealthily promotes abortion. They're telling women they should look a certain way, they should have careers, all these things," unquote. Another point he said was that one of the arguments I probably saw 20 times online today was about rape, and obviously they always want to go to the rape card. Rape is obviously a horrible thing, but an abortion is not gonna, it's not gonna heal the wounds of that, and two wrongs is not gonna, it's not gonna make a right. Those are the exact quotes from Matt Burke, among some of the other topics that he addressed back at this national anti-abortion group forum in Georgia in June. So I imagine, Patrick, this is probably not what Scott Jensen was hoping to get out of Matt Burke with this video that was released after Jensen was kind of pivoting on the abortion issue and saying that he would consider exceptions for banning rape in Minnesota for the health of a mother, also for rape and incest. So I imagine this probably not what Jensen was hoping to be getting out of Burke right now in the campaign, is just putting more of these types of issues in the forefront that could portray that, portray his ticket as being very extreme on the issue.
Yeah, Burke's candidacy so far, I think, has raised a real national need for an investigation of grade inflation at Harvard College, from which Burke is apparently a graduate, but he has a habit of dousing his foot in Tabasco before sticking it squarely in his mouth. But these are things that he believes, I should say, and so I guess he can't blame the guy. These are his principles. A lot of Americans share those principles. But as to your point about Jensen, I mean, I think that's exactly right, where he does not want to make this campaign about abortion. In fact, he said, I think a week or two ago, this election is not about abortion. And, you know, my response is, well, says who? Because Roe v. Wade was just overturned, and you better believe it's about abortion for a lot of people and abortion rights. And as you noted, Jensen is trying to wiggle out of the more strident positions he's taken in the past when he was trying to win the Republican endorsement. Now he's secured that endorsement. He's trying to nudge back to the center. But this is not an issue where you can easily fudge where you are. People tend to, they want to know. And once you set it, it's hard to escape from it. So I think the problem is that Burke puts Jensen firmly in the anti-abortion camp, and he just keeps reminding voters of Jensen's position and association with Burke, and keeps reminding them of this issue. For Jensen, it's a winnable race, but he really needed to try to get the race centered on a couple issues like inflation and crime, and instead, certainly this summer, we've been talking a lot about abortion and sort of the national environment of craziness, for lack of a better word, in the Republican Party.
And, of course, the Jensen-Burke campaign is, if they're going to win the governor's match, and they're going to have to win back some female voters from the suburbs and exurbs, and weird quotes like, they're telling women they should look a certain way, they should have careers, all those things. Yeah, just kind of a very weird quote from Jensen, or excuse me, from Burke back at that forum in Georgia. And one final point on this is that...
Let me say about that, I think it's important to note that before the pandemic, when a lot of women had to leave the workforce, unfortunately, Minnesota's workforce was 51.5% women. Minnesota is just a longtime leader in women reaching really the heights of corporate power and just participating in the workforce. And so it's frankly just ignorant for lack of a better word, that he doesn't know more about that and doesn't understand that. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, what are you thinking, saying that and realizing that it could become public?
Yeah, especially when it was only about a month ago. This isn't something that was just dug out of the archives like 7, 8, or 9 years ago. This was just back in June on the very same day that the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade. I want to move on to one final piece that you guys are writing about over at The Reformer, and that has to do, of course, with the legalization of Delta 8 and some forms of cannabis in Minnesota, as you guys recently wrote how Hemp Acres is a company based in Waconia that is now one of the largest cannabis processing facilities in the nation after opening their operation, which is a 37,000 square foot facility, which is in Waconia, which is about 30 miles west of Minneapolis. Governor Tim Walz was there earlier this week highlighting the expansion of hemp with the new law that was passed inadvertently by the state legislature, and we'll probably end up seeing more of these types of facilities with demand sky high, as already this company Hemp Acres is saying, is that they're having trouble keeping up with demand after the legislature legalized a THC in some form based on hemp, correct?
Right. So this company was very early in the hemp experimentation after the 2014 federal farm bill. I think that the owner was the first licensed processor, and around that time there was a little bit of opening to allow for experimentation with hemp, which is hemp is actually just cannabis, but it's defined in law kind of arbitrarily as low THC, THC being the chemical that gets people high. And then in 2018, they opened it up much more. And one could argue, as I did in a recent column, that the 2018 federal law is really what would open the floodgates. And you could argue really legalized THC, or at least created this kind of gray market. And now, of course, we've really solidified that legalization, at least in 5 milligram THC edibles and drinks. And so this company was already kind of well positioned because they're already getting off the ground and finding a lot of uses for hemp across industries. And then, of course, this comes along the July 1 THC law, and now we're going to be looking to companies like this to produce a lot of hopefully safe product. And so it's a really fascinating thing. I was surprised that we had, you know, such a big hemp processor here. They see a lot of growth ahead. There is the number of hemp growers has actually strangely declined in the last year. Who knows, maybe it's pandemic related. But it'll be interesting to see if we see a bigger market more acreage being devoted to hemp. We'll have to see how that develops.
Yeah, it's interesting too, as what was noted in the article, that the Midwest actually used to be called the Hemp Belt of America, and certainly Minnesota was among that, so maybe things could end up changing in the very near future. Also, like the note you had in the newsletter this morning talking about how, well, when you look at the DFL party and that F stands for farmer within the party, well, maybe this could do something in terms of trying to help DFLers with rural voters and people who possibly live on farms or vote on farming issues, but unfortunately, this facility is not exactly very large compared to, well, the rest of the ag industry we have in Minnesota. But it is kind of interesting note that at least you're seeing the DFL kind of going back to that F portion of DFL.
Right. I mean, and I think there's potential there, although the acreage is really quite small. And even what they want to get to, like 10,000 acres, would still be, you know, really tiny compared to farms overall, but it also could be lead to younger people. Maybe they want to go start a hemp farm, and there might be an opportunity for Democrats to create new pathways in communities where they've often kind of basically just retreated and left some progressives behind out in rural Minnesota.
Well, you can read more about that and the other articles that we talked about today over at the Minnesota Reformer. Again, website MinnesotaReformer.com, as we have been speaking with Patrick Coulican, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, about some of the articles that they've been working on for the past few days. Patrick, as always, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
All right, it's time for a break, so let's send things back over to Matt McNeil right after this.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Wow! Matt Burke. Women should be at home. Fire bad. Here, kitty, 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 kitty. Man, dude, what are you doing? Maybe he's okay with women working if they're nuns. Yeah, that's just it. That's the whole deal. You know, you can go back to your job teaching the kids, having a career there or something like that, but you got to be a nun first, because then you're divine, and that's okay. I don't know. I do not know. But once again, the quote is this: our culture loudly but also stealthily promotes abortion. They tell women that they should look a certain way, that they should have careers, all these things. So apparently, careers lead to abortions. That's apparently what he's thinking. Like I said, and Coulican, bravo. Go get the number saying that women make up 51.5% of the Minnesota labor force. Hey, guess what? That would, let alone, first of all, it's hugely misogynistic, you jackass. But you'd actually completely crash the economy. But or maybe you just, you know, what we'll do is we'll pay the women a lot less. We'll keep that system in place. That way they'll be discouraged from getting a job. You know, they can stay at home, get me a beer, that sort of thing. I don't know what you're doing, dude. But the entire Republican Party is a freaking mess right now. So you can go out there and show me your videos of fireworks in Minneapolis. Or Ilhan Omar or Kim Walls. Yes, you have got an absolute freaking train wreck, and it's delicious. Give me more. Devil's Radio up next. Native Roots Radio up in the 6 o'clock hour. We're back tomorrow. Until then, see ya!